Hello, this is From the Margins here on CKDU 88.1 FM, and on tonight's show we're going to talk about tent city and affordable housing, or the lack thereof, in Halifax. So I'm here with a few people. Would you like to introduce yourselves?
I'm Jocelyn Tranquilla and
Cap Larson.
Cole Weber.
All right, so why don't we just get started right into it. Let's talk first about the event itself. So tent city, what is the idea of tent city? Like, what is it exactly, and who brought it together?
Well, tent city is a public demonstration around the issues of affordable housing. The idea is to pack the commons, which is the location that we're doing it in, with tents to make a visible statement about the lack of affordable housing, that many people are forced to live in tents or in other unstable, unsafe at times conditions because of the current housing situation, which is that there is not enough of it. And also to bring people together to have critical discussion about the housing crisis and why we don't have enough housing and kind of the economics behind that, and to move forward in critical discussion around that and then further action.
So the Nova Scotia Common Fund for Housing have been together since March, I think. We came out of the Political Action Committee at the Out of the Cold Shelter, which the Out of the Cold Shelter is a volunteer-run emergency shelter. That's a last resort shelter. It is directly a result of the lack of affordable housing and the current housing situation, and also it allows a space for people who are not able to access or don't feel safe at the other shelters. So that was there was a Political Action Committee that formed. Because although we were working on this out of the cold shelter, we also recognized openly that emergency shelters are not an appropriate response to the housing crisis or to homelessness. They're necessary, they're just stopgap measure, but need to be working on the bigger issue as well. So political action group got together, and then over time we changed names, first to the coalition and then to a common front for housing.
So you mentioned affordable housing crisis. Why don't we elaborate on that? So what is the affordable housing crisis in terms of the lack of housing or the state of housing or any of that stuff? What is the affordable housing crisis in Halifax?
Right now, I think we find ourselves in a period where social provision generally has been rolled back. And this is something that we've seen for the last 25 years or so. Sometimes it's referred to as a period of neoliberalism. A time where the state is withdrawing a lot of its previous support for people, various programs of social provision, from welfare to unemployment insurance to housing. So in Halifax and throughout Nova Scotia, it's not so much an issue of a lack of quantity. It's not that as if there's not enough individual homes for people to live in so much as it's an issue, in my mind, of affordability and an issue of quality in terms of the actual condition of housing. So in HRM, rents are high and getting higher. So if you're somebody who's on social assistance, if you're somebody who's working for relatively low wages, like $10 to $12 an hour, that general range, you're going to be having a struggle to pay for your housing. So that's a problem. The condition of housing, the quality of housing, is another huge problem in my mind. There's ample quantities of slum housing in HRM, so housing that just doesn't live up to a decent basic standard that we think all people should be entitled to. Affordability and quality are two key issues in my mind.
I'd also add control over housing. I find that tenants in the current housing market in Halifax and most places in North America have very little control over their housing, especially when there is a lack of housing. It gives landlords a lot more leverage and a lot more power over people's homes that they're living in if they do have homes. And that's another thing that we'd like to address, is how people are abused and exploited by their landlords. And one of our demands also is around co-op housing, which is one type of housing model where tenants are able to have a little bit more control over their housing and not be at the whims of their landlords. But I think that's also a general issue across the board around housing as a capitalist commodity and not something that is created for need and created because people need to live somewhere. It's created because landlords and developers wish to make a profit off of the commodity, which is your home. So that's a general kind of talking point that we really want to address in our material and at the Tent City.
I'd add just one more thing. Cole makes a good point about talking about just social programs and social supports in general being cut back with the neoliberal agenda. And part of that is that people who are maybe struggling with mental illness or maybe folks who need support, they're not able to participate in the economy. They are living in poverty, many of those people. We know that. We know for sure that people who are living in poverty and that those people, the supportive housing options, that there aren't appropriate ones. There aren't ones that aren't enough, but not even just that. There aren't ones that are meeting people where they need to be met.
One example that I think's really indicative of like the time of clawback of social provision that we find ourselves in is the whole example of food banks and how food banks became sort of commonplace maybe in the late 80s and early 90s, and as a stopgap measure, the idea being that, you know, at the end of the month, or you know, people who are on social assistance or making low wages don't have quite enough to make ends meet, so we need to have some sort of charity for people to go and get some food so that they can make ends meet. So now we see food banks like very prolific all across Nova Scotia. We have a huge corporation that coordinates food banks now, Feed Nova Scotia. It's just sort of an established institution, part of something that's just taken for granted that, of course, you know, people on welfare, people who work for low wages aren't going to have enough to feed themselves. We need charities to help them. So what's really scary is that we see the same thing happening with these volunteer out of the cold shelters.
Yeah.
We see them popping up in all kinds of different towns, not only in HRM. So it's like, okay, so these volunteer out of the cold shelters, are they going to become as widespread as food banks? Is that what we want? Is that something that we think is acceptable? For our part, with the Common Front for Housing, we would say no, it's completely unacceptable, and that's why we want to resist that kind of agenda with the Tent City.
Might as well give some context to that. So out of the cold shelter was mentioned. Perhaps some people don't know exactly what that is. Does someone want to briefly describe what that shelter is?
Sure, I can give some kind of historical background on that. Around 2004, there was a series of rooming house closures in the HRM where the city was forcing kind of slum rooming houses to close its doors due to bylaw infractions, and a lot of those people ended up on the streets, and they kind of did that after years and years of neglect and not actually holding landlords to keeping decent housing conditions, which would have avoided that initial circumstance. So 2004, there was a series of rooming house closures. There's a few groups that got together, including the Halifax Coalition Against Poverty, to pressure the city to have some sort of emergency shelter for the folks that were evicted from the rooming house, but also to redesign and reinforce the bylaw enforcement process for slum landlords. And out of that, there was some occupations of city council, and that really put the fire under the city and the province to look at the situation of housing and shelters. And kind of long story short, that ended up in the funding of Pendleton Place, which was funded by St. Leonard's, or it was run by the St. Leonard Society of Nova Scotia and funded by the province. And that shelter operated until 2008. It didn't open the winter of 2008. And there was some reorganization of the shelter system where that shelter was closed, and there was a few more beds added to some of the other shelters, but it dramatically decreased the amount of options that people who were living without homes had access to. And many people ended up spending that 2008 winter season on the streets because they didn't feel comfortable going to the other shelters or weren't able to access them for a variety of reasons. And so the Out of the Cold shelter started with a coalition of groups, including the Halifax Coalition Against Poverty, many other service and social provision agencies as well, pressuring the government to reopen or refund Pendleton Place or refund another emergency shelter similar to Pendleton Place. Spent most of the 2008 winter trying to get that happening, which was unsuccessful. There was no movement from the government to refund or to open another shelter. The province was very firm that they did not see a need, that they thought the other shelters were able to accommodate everybody, even though it was completely inaccurate, and some shelters, such as Adsum for Women and Children, were full and turning up to two-thirds of the people away who were coming to their shelter, which is a huge number. And so that group of people who were basically lobbying the government to open Pendleton Place again came together and decided that if the government wasn't going to fill the needs that we saw our community facing, that we would do it ourselves. And opened in the spring for March and April of 2009 for 2 months of emergency winter shelter at Fort Massey Church. And then again last year at St. Matthew's Church. And totally run by volunteers, very little funding. Last year there were some staff, but that's kind of basic history. And now we're going into the third season of that, needing a little bit more staffing, it's getting a little bit more institutionalized, looking for more funding. It's no longer an emergency stopgap measure. It's something that is going to be needed year after year because of the housing struggle and the housing crisis. And it is, just as Cole was saying, like another type of downloading of social services from the government to private individuals, community, and charities like the food bank, and creating something that we're going to have to rely on with very little funding or resources. And I think that the work of the Nova Scotia Common Front, and specifically with the Tent City, is kind of a move away from just letting the government off the hook, so to say, and allowing them to download social services to the public and to charity, and kind of making a visible stance, reclaiming some public land for, albeit a brief period of time, to make that message.
For now, I just want to mention these demands and then ask if anyone wanted to comment on that, because you did mention the application of some pressure on these bodies that have refused to fund. Okay, so all newly constructed housing to have 25% designated as affordable housing. Did anybody want to comment on that?
Sure, it's a really basic policy, so we want all levels of government to adopt a policy whereby any newly constructed housing, part of that would have to be 25% of that would have to be designated for affordable housing based on people's income. So the general accepted figure is that housing that is affordable costs no more than 30% of one's monthly income. So we want legislation, laws that say developers, you have to designate 25% of any new developments that you create to affordable housing that will be rent geared to income.
And the immediate construction of 3,000 infill social housing units to eliminate the province-wide public housing waiting list. What is referred to by this?
As of December of 2009, there were about 1,500 applications waiting to be processed and on the waiting list for metro regional housing. And that doesn't even reflect the entire province-wide waiting list. And so we're just calling for kind of basic social housing to reduce that waiting list. And one of those provisions also was that it was infill social housing, so using abandoned lots and buildings that are currently existing in the on the peninsula to provide that housing. So instead of creating suburban sprawl and locating public housing into nodes that are far away from services and public transportation, to integrate that housing into the fabric of the peninsula's urban structure.
I just add to that that the 1,500 applicants that haven't been assessed yet, to be clear, that represents far more than 1,500 people, because those each application can represent a whole family.
The province must reestablish rent control regulations to keep rents affordable and provide security of tenure. So what's referred to by that?
So rent control, pretty basic concept, just limits on the amount that landlords are able to raise tenants' rent. Currently, there are no rent controls, so a landlord can raise a tenant's rent as much as they feel, as long as they give proper notice. So we want limits on that. Because we know that the current situation means that many tenants face what we call economic evictions. So they're essentially pushed out of their housing because the rent becomes too high for them to be able to afford. What security of tenure means is basically just means that tenants be given protection from the outset of their tenancy from eviction for no reasons. So currently, tenants in Nova Scotia have no security of tenure unless they've lived for 5 years consecutively in one dwelling. And before that, a landlord can evict a tenant without security of tenure without reasons. They just have to give proper notice.
Okay, so let's just keep running through here. The province and the HRM must improve existing residential tenancy legislation. I've heard that the Residential Tenancy Act is really referred to as the Landlord's Act, so I think that's what that refers to, but does someone want to add any more to that?
I think this points to what was spoken about before, about just slum landlords and landlords kind of not taking care of their property, so that there would now need to be regular housing inspections. The idea is that the housing wouldn't get to a state where it would be unsafe, because there'd be legislation around the landlord needing to be responsible for that.
Also, currently, the Residential Tenancy Act has no teeth. So even if tenants were to go to the tenancy board and make a complaint and be successful in that complaint, and an order is issued to the landlord to do certain repairs, there's no enforcement of that. Nobody comes and checks on the landlord to make sure that they did it. There's really no general enforcement. So part of that demand is around actually holding landlords accountable to the repairs or orders that they are deemed to be necessary on their properties.
And from my perspective, I'm not alone in this on the common front, that this is not just an issue of bad landlords being bad people or unkind or something. This is an issue of housing being for profit. And so these landlords are driven by the bottom line, which is profit, and that is an inherent problem in this system.
Now, here again is mentioned supportive housing. All levels of government must improve supportive housing to address homelessness and the chronic use of shelters. So, any further on that?
Well, Jocelyn spoke to it before, right? She was saying about, you know, people with mental illness or people with addictions issues or whatnot, people who need supports in order to live independently and maintain their housing. There's no appropriate options for people, so we need the government to reinvest in supportive housing options for people who need it.
Reinstatement of the federal cooperative housing program. So here's where co-ops are mentioned again, which was cut in 1991. What is the cooperative housing program?
The cooperative housing program was a program that was in place in many different forms, most strongly in the 60s and 70s, but still had quite a large presence in the 80s as well, and it allowed people to get together to start housing cooperatives, so getting startup cash from the province as well as assistance with their mortgage in order to create affordable housing that's controlled by the members or by the tenants of the buildings. Co-op housing is a structure where there is no kind of quote-unquote landlord. It's run by a board or a cooperative incorporation, and things are decided cooperatively through the members, and it creates a lot more security for people who are living in co-op housing, a lot more control, a lot more affordability. And there was a lot of support for that until 1991, where that program was cut. Now it's very, very difficult for housing cooperatives to form because there's very little financial support for that, as well as other support. And housing prices, especially on the peninsula, are prohibitively high, that unless you have some sort of capital to start with, you are not going to be able to afford to buy a building, especially if your intention is to live in it and it's your intention is not to garner a profit. Mm-hmm. So we're finding it very difficult for co-ops to both start new, but also to survive the ones that are already existing. There's very little support for the maintenance and upkeep of cooperative housing, and there's a big push towards private management. One of the kind of guiding premise of co-op housing is that it's controlled by the people that live in the housing, and there's a big push from the province and even the Canadian Federation of Housing Cooperatives for private management and to hire management, or even to have that housing be subsumed by the Department of Community Services, which again means that many people aren't going to have control over their housing, and that housing stock is deteriorating because there's not enough support to maintain it and to support it. So part of the Common Front demands is about reinstating a program like the Federal Cooperative Housing Program that provided subsidies to co-ops, both for their mortgage and for the low-income members, but also to maintain and sustain co-ops as they are and to promote self-management.
The last demand that's listed is the feds must reestablish a national housing strategy. So what was that?
Right. Well, I mean, we have a Canada Health Act, right? So the idea being that it's a piece of legislation, federal legislation, that sets out basic principles and regulations for how healthcare is managed and obligates the provinces to fund Medicare and to keep it, you know, a public service. We basically want the same thing for housing. We want there to be federal legislation that says, yes, housing is a right that all Canadians should enjoy and that the provinces have an obligation to provide it and that there is a source of funding in place on an ongoing basis to ensure the provision of housing. So we had a strategy that was cut in the 90s. In the early 90s, under the Liberal government, Paul Martin was the finance minister. They slashed it, part of the neoliberal agenda. Prior to that, you had, you know, in excess of 20,000 new affordable housing units being built across the country through this program. In 1993, it was eliminated entirely. So we want a national housing strategy put back in place.
Something that I've been noticing while we've been talking about these demands and also when we were formulating them as a group is that so much of this isn't even about breaking new ground. It's just about getting back what's been slashed in the past, and most specifically in the early 90s. I mean, we've got seven demands here. We've got province must reestablish rent control. That was cut in 1993. We must reinstate the Federal Cooperative Housing Program, cut in 1991. We must reestablish the National Housing Strategy, again, cut in the early 90s. What we're asking for, or what we're demanding here, is not new or radical or even like pushing things to a new level. It's just about getting back what's been slowly slipping away from our hands, and I find that really frustrating.
And what's scary about it is that, like, that rollback of social provision is probably only going to increase its pace. We're now not only in the age of neoliberalism, but since the economic crisis, now we're in an age of austerity where, you know, governments across internationally are in their meetings and whatnot are saying, you know, we have to roll back social programs, we have to cut spending, we have to bust unions. We have to cut public sector wages. Working people across the world are going to have to pay for the fact that our economic system fails. And so that's what we're up against.
In looking at just reestablishing what we had, you know, Kat points out really, I agree with her when she's saying it's not radical at all. Yesterday I was hearing somebody talk about their experience living on welfare, getting $535 a month. And she was saying, you know, I just need to learn how to survive. Other people just, we just need to figure out you can do it, but you just need to just survive. And I think that we, even at our level, we're looking at kind of just surviving. What we're pushing for is not big radical things. And I think that's kind of sad from my perspective. You know, $535 in our right now where we're living in Halifax, people are really just barely surviving, like to find housing on that amount of money. Just surviving isn't enough.
So what we were talking about is the demands and recommendations from the Common Front for housing. But now, I guess, like, even going beyond that, because we did talk about how this is really trying to bring back a lot of that was taken away, so it's more like a very kind of a defensive thing. But in terms of moving outwards and going further than that, beyond this tent city, because this tent city really is just a protest where it's happening on the park, but it's not even really an example of civil disobedience or anything. It's done with all the proper approval and that, so to speak. So it's just to create, in some ways, like a very public spectacle of the problems and a lot of commentary of these problems, with lots of people speaking, lots of that. But it is, to what I can gather, at least from looking at it, an idea to hopefully try to extend the housing struggle beyond where it is now. Am I right on that?
Yeah, and obviously the tent city is it's a modest initiative. But I think one thing that I'm particularly excited about in terms of the event is that we want to create a space where we can have a discussion within the movement or within people who are concerned about housing as an issue and who are concerned with launching, you know, a defense against the age of austerity, the rollback of social provision. So we're going to have a number of workshops and discussions where we can have an open discussion as a movement or as people who want to resist and fight back about how we can do that more effectively. And I think spaces like that are critical, and we need to be having them all the time.
And there's one of the workshops that I'm particularly looking forward to about the economics of the housing crisis. So breaking it down about why did the housing bubble burst in the United States? Why are housing prices through the roof on the peninsula? What's going to happen with interest rates? All that kind of stuff that is more kind of the nitty-gritty about how capitalism functions to keep housing as a profitable commodity for developers and those that have the capital to invest in real estate, and how that affects people kind of on the ground who have to participate in that in order to have somewhere to live. And I think that really points to how our demands are really quite surface, in that they will merely only ameliorate the situation of the housing crisis to kind of dampen the blow of the capitalist control over housing, and how that creates a situation where many people aren't able to have control over their housing or even afford their housing. So I think we need to move past these demands and actually be really questioning our housing system as a whole. And why is it that something that is such a essential need for us as humans, something that people and corporations and businesses are able to profit off of? We just need to rethink that whole system. And I think that the tent city, there's going to be some space to kind of envision and dialogue around how to kind of push that those ideas a little bit further.
As is common from the margins, we always like to, as has been done so far, get into how this particular problem of housing relates to the larger capitalist system, and we have been getting into that. You mentioned that just this current economic crisis, the bursting of the housing bubble, the whole idea of paying for housing, renting housing, it's a market commodity. Fact is that on the market, any commodity will not be priced at a certain level that everyone can afford it, but that enough people can afford it that the capitalist continues to make a profit and can reinvest that and all that. If there's enough ultra-rich people paying for housing that you can screw over enough poor people, then fine, you're still making your profit. So as a market commodity, housing will always be inaccessible to the poorest of people. That's just the nature of capitalism. So within this context, becomes pretty clear to me that through asking, through simply participating in the housing market one way or another, even by trying to form co-ops within the current structure that is, only some people will be able to afford to do it, that sort of thing. It's still on the margins. So unless there's some more direct resistance, then nothing can actually change to take care of all the people that simply are pushed out. Simply don't have the money. There's no way to change it within the market. It has to be done through some direct challenge of that market. So thinking of that, unavoidably, there would have to be some sort of way of people accessing housing, whether or not they have money. So it gets into broader discussion about how does that happen? How do people get, like what has already been mentioned, is there is enough housing out there. There's enough space out there. How do the people who need it get access to that? And that's moving beyond, I think, but that's a complicated sort of issue of how practically that's done. But does anyone have anything to say about that like advancing of the struggle, like how that might look? Any ideas?
Well, I mean, one thing that comes to mind immediately is like small movements in the United States right now around the squatting or the occupying of foreclosed homes, right? So in the States, you've had the bursting of the housing bubble. You've had, many, many people's homes being foreclosed on by the banks because they're unable to pay their mortgages. So in that context, the movement has arisen in small pockets where people have actually been, occupying foreclosed homes against the will of the banks, obviously, and also against local authorities. So that's an example of working people sort of taking things into their own hands and saying, no, housing is something that we need. We can't reproduce ourselves. We can't continue to live without it. So we're going to take things into our own hands.
I also think it's about leverage. It's about people organizing together in a way that they can actually pose some sort of challenge to whatever system they're up against, so be it the housing system or the capitalist system in general. I think those are really big systems to challenge, but without some sort of leverage, the people that have power in those systems aren't going to concede to any sort of demands. So I'm really inspired by a lot of the general strikes that are happening in Europe right now, because it actually poses some sort of threat and leverage with people being able to withdraw their labor from that system. And especially what I'm reading about what's happening in France and having the workers at the oil refineries on strike. And that's creating huge ripples, where if that strike continues, planes aren't going to be able to take off in France because of the lack of oil come Tuesday, tomorrow. So, I mean, that's like an actual material threat to the day-to-day operations of capitalism. And until we can kind of organize ourselves to have that degree of leverage, we're simply going to be demanding things into thin air.
I think that one thing that plays a factor in the housing situation here in Nova Scotia is, or that complicates it, is that there are some of the housing groups and certainly even parts of the housing common front that are looking at public-private partnerships. That's a really, it's a thing that's very common in our world, is this public-private partnerships. And I think if you're looking at this system as being inherently problematic for profit housing, then negotiating public-private partnerships is obviously a big problem. So getting people even within, people who are on the same table saying, yeah, housing is an issue, but there's a really big diversity in perspectives on how to address the issue. And I would certainly say that not everybody is looking to for radical change.
Why don't we just announce again what is happening this Saturday with Tent City? Does anybody want to announce some of the events coming up?
All right, so next Saturday, October 23rd, we're going to have Tent City. It's going to kick off at 3 p.m. on the North Commons at the corner of Roby and Kennard Street. At 3 p.m. there will be a rally with some speakers, some chants, you know, getting the spirit going. Then we're going to be having a series of workshops and discussions. Kat mentioned one's going to be the economics of the housing crisis. I believe, Mr. Rashid, you're going to be giving one yourself on the role of civil disobedience and struggles for housing. That will be, that'll be important to check out for all y'all. And importantly, following the workshops will be dinner. So there will be free food on site for people to come down, have some hot dogs, hamburgers. At 7, we'll kick off musical entertainment with a series of bands. I don't have the list of performers in front of me, but I'm sure they will be great. And so we're asking people to come out, bring a tent, pitch a tent, hang out overnight, you know, take that political space for housing and against cuts to social provision for the night. And stick around until the next day. We'll have breakfast, and that will be that.
I would just add to that that there will be kids' activities the whole day, so it's a family-friendly event. There's going to be kids' activities the whole day, and also that there's going to be an open mic starting at 9 o'clock, so that everybody out there listening can come out at 9 o'clock for an acoustic open mic starting at 9.
Should be a good overnight event as well. We're going to have a projector and can show movies, karaoke. There's a ball field. It's pretty open. Whatever people want to do to make that space kind of a fun site of resistance all night long, it's open for folks to come out and participate in that.
These are your commons. Take it back.